You're listening to episode 302 of Women Worldwide. Do you know a lot of men who champion women in the workplace? Where are the good guys, those strong and supportive allies? I've got two guests today who have a lot to share on this topic, so stay tuned to learn more. Hi, I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. I've spent an entire career helping women to share stories, nurture relationships, grow their brands, but most of all, to find their voices so they can make a difference. Do you feel stuck? Do you want to power up your own voice? Women Worldwide features the stories of passionate women who have navigated big career challenges and some of the toughest changes. These professionals offer deep insights and advice to inspire you and to help you uncover what's holding you back. Let Women Worldwide ignite your passion so you can excel in life. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Women Worldwide. Thank you so much for showing up, for tuning in, and we appreciate how much sharing you're doing, sharing the episodes, and also letting us know how you're doing and how you feel, because as you do, we continue to deliver the stories, the guests, the inspiration, motivation, and the advice to help you. So today's show is no different. Let's get right to it. The topic is men supporting women in the workplace. Where are the good guys, the champions, and the allies who are there to support? And that is the perfect segue to my special guest today. And I say special guest because I have two guests joining me on the show. We have David Smith. And David is an associate professor of sociology at the College of Leadership, Ethics, and at the U.S. Naval War College. And I think I might have mutilated that a little bit, so you can always correct me, David. And we have Brad Johnson, who is a clinical psychologist, a professor of psychology in the Department of Leadership, Ethics, and Law at the United States Naval Academy. And they are the co-authors. They first wrote a book called Athena Rising, and now they've written a new book. It's called Good Guys, How Men Can Be Better Allies for Women in the Workplace. David, Brad, welcome to Women Worldwide.
Great to be here with you, Deirdre.
Thanks, Deirdre. Thanks for inviting us.
Well, my pleasure. And what a topic to be talking about on Women Worldwide. We're thrilled that you wrote the book. And before we get to Good Guys, maybe you can each share how you got to focusing on gender in the workplace and really bringing men into the picture. So, David, why don't you start us off with that?
Certainly. So Brad and I taught together at the Naval Academy for almost 8 years. And as you heard, I'm a sociologist, and I focus all of my research, we call the intersection of gender, work, and family. So looking at gendered perspectives of work and careers and how a family interacts with that. And my good friend and colleague here, Dr. Brad Johnson, is, you know, as a clinical psychologist who's done all of his research in the area of mentoring relationships, we found that together we had a common interest in particular as we were looking at how gender equity was playing out in a variety of different industries and professions, including the ours around the military. That often these were conversations where there were more women and just not very many guys who were involved in these conversations and creating that equity, and really how men tuned out from the conversation the minute it went to something around gender, or if it was a women's leadership initiative, whatever the case might have been, the guys just looked at that in many cases and said, oh, that's not for me. There's not a place for me there. And so Brad and I were really interested in learning more about how we could get more men engaged in this conversation and why they weren't engaging in this conversation. Because the way we were looking at it was women have advanced to a large degree in our organizations today in senior leadership to probably about as far as they're going to get without all of us really getting involved and really committing to creating this gender equity in the workplace. And it was going to take men, right? Because this is not just a women's issue. This is a leadership issue. So it's going to take women and men to be involved in that. And so
Absolutely.
That led to our first collaboration.
Excellent. And Brad, do you want to add anything to that from your perspective?
You know, I think there's also the personal case for both Dave and I, right? So Dave graduated from the Naval Academy here, and that's where he met his wife, and he got to see her go through the Navy. You know, as he's dealing with his career, he sees her facing all of these headwinds that he's never encountered, and I think that gave him a real sense of empathy for the experience of women's, moments in the workplace being quite different. In my case, it was my younger sister who's also in the Navy. She's a Navy captain. And, you know, I was in the Navy too. And I have just seen Shannon, my sister's experience, as being quite different, right? She gets told to smile all the time. She gets shamed for running too fast on physical fitness tests because it makes the guys feel bad. You know, there are just so many things I never encountered. And I think for both Dave and I, you know, we've had these eye-opening moments with women we care about. So yes, there's the academic business case that got us intrigued here, but there's the personal as well.
Well, thank you for sharing that. I think it's so important when you witness something personal, you really become that much more invested in it. And, you know, I guess the two of you found success with Athena Rising. And when it comes to good guys, was it an aha moment for both of you? Was it one of you said, hey, this really is about good guys. Let's write the book. Who came up with the idea?
Yeah, I wish one of us could take credit. I don't know that that's the case. But here's the story, Deirdre. Yeah. So we had written Athena Rising, right, which is all about how men can be more active mentors and sponsors for women. And Dave and I were out on the road speaking to groups of men, especially about how we can get better mentoring our female colleagues. And what happened was Me Too went widespread, right, in 2017. So all the research was showing women or men are on the sidelines now, right? We don't want to talk to women. It's dangerous. It's scary. And Dave and I were getting pulled into other broader conversations about, hey, where are men just in terms of how they show up or don't show up for their female colleagues? The bigger picture of allyship. And that really got us thinking. And we had actually had a different next book project in the works. Yeah. And we put that on the shelf and said, we need to lean into this conversation around allyship because men are asking, how do I show up? I mean, it's not just mentoring and sponsoring, but how do I really show up as a colleague to move the needle on equity and inclusion? And that felt like such an important conversation. We wanted to go out and do the research to find out what the best practices would be.
Absolutely. And David, so who, when you think of men, and there's men all over the world, were you thinking of a certain person in mind, a certain leader in an organization who wasn't helping, who should help? All men? Were you thinking generation? Maybe you could tell us who the book is best suited for.
Yeah, and I think we were broadly thinking about all, maybe not all men, but most men, I would say. Yeah. Because one of the things that struck us is that, as Brad mentioned, you know, most men believe in gender equity. Most men believe in gender equality. If you ask them, they will tell you they are supporters, they're behind it. So if we just take that for a minute at face value as an assumption here that men believe in it and are willing to at least tell us that, why aren't they doing the work, right? There is work involved here. And why aren't we seeing the action that goes with that? And that's what Brad and I were really after was, okay, so is it different? And we were looking for that. Is it different for younger generations of men than for older generations of men? Is it different at different levels of leadership? Because we did broadly think that, again, we wanted to write a book that spoke to all men at whatever level of the organization they're in. Again, if you're a new employee, first rung manager, or if you're a middle manager, or if you're the CEO or the chair of the board, we feel like everyone has a role to play in this. And we wanted to make sure that in a variety of different ways, we connected with each of those audiences of men, and not just men, right? But for women too, because again, as we look at allyship, it's at the root of the word, you know, it's an alliance. So it's an alliance with each other. So we all have to come together to do this work. And I think that's been one of the challenges of of again, a lot of gender equity initiatives out there. Is it the focus, again, in supporting women and advancing women? Yes, that's the end all, I guess, goal of it. But in order to do it, we have to bring everybody along with us in this work that we're doing out there. And we have to show people, what does it look like? And give them the specific actions and the things that they need to be doing. And again, that happens at every level of the organization, not just at one or another. And again, there's different challenges, I think, with different generations of men.
Yeah.
Certainly. And we address that in the book in a variety of different ways. But I don't think there's ever a kind of a one-size-fits-all when it comes to allyship. But we try to, again, look at best practices across different domains.
So Brad, I'm going to get you to jump in here. What are some of the action steps when it comes to being an ally? What can men do to support?
Yeah. So, you know, I hope we have 5 hours, Deirdre, because that's how, because Dave and I have a book full, but what we'll do is pick some of our favorites.
Read the book. They have to read.
Yeah. Yeah. So here's the way we have sort of broken down all of the ally strategies that we got, because our book is based on interviews with women, right? And we asked women, what does male allyship look like to you? And what have these men done behaviorally that has really mattered to you or been really useful? And so we've taken all those and distilled them down to the sort of the nuts and bolts, but there are two big categories. So one is the interpersonal, you know, how do you show up in a relationship? And then the other is more of the public. So I'll just give a few best practices from the interpersonal side. So number one, guys, show up and listen. I cannot tell you how shocked Dave and I were when over and over again we heard, number one, could you just listen? So what that communicated to us is that we men are not that great at listening, and we need to really get better at that.
I'm glad you said that.
Don't make assumptions about her, right? Because she's a woman, she must want to do this, or she wouldn't want to do that in her career. Don't do that. Ask her. You know, discern what her career dream looks like. Do the inclusion, right? Ask who's not here, who should be here, who's not in this Zoom meeting during the pandemic, whose voice is missing, you know, from this important conversation. I think if men have more situational awareness, you know, about how people are being heard, not heard, excluded, interrupted, if we can be more aware of those dynamics, we're going to get better at making sure our female colleagues are included. And then just one more, pass the friend test. You need to have a group of women around you as a guy who you have earned trust with. And these are the women who might be sort of what we think of as your gender confidants. They're going to tell you when you're getting it right and when you're getting it wrong, right? So this may be a female colleague who comes to me after a meeting and says, Brad, dude, when you said that in the meeting, it really didn't land the right way. And here's why. And you need to be more aware of that. Women are not going to share that with me unless I have shown that my heart's in the right place, that I'll listen to feedback, that I value feedback, and that I let her know I appreciate it, and that I put it into action. So those are just a few, I think, on the interpersonal front.
Those are really good action steps. David, what would prevent a man, whether it's a corporation, a small business, a nonprofit, what would prevent somebody from not wanting to be an ally? What are some of the challenges there, do you think?
Yeah, that's a great question. And another one where we found this in the research for both Athena Rising and for Good Guys. And let me just give you a quick synopsis. There was so much in the research we did for Athena Rising, first and foremost, about why men were not as active and engaged in being mentors and sponsors for women, that we call this the reluctant male syndrome. And we're kind of, you know, we're joking a little bit about that, but it really was. There were so many reasons. And it starts with, you know, just the basic implicit biases or perceptions we have about each other as men and women in the workplace. And certainly, just like I said before, men are often very vocal about being gender equity, you know, allies out there, but are they doing the work?
Action steps.
Yeah, right. It's the, but if I'm, and they will say, and they'll say very positive things about women, right? If you ask them about women in the workplace, oh yeah, they're wonderful. I love to work with them. And what they're not saying is that, oh wow, these are really strong, ambitious women who are really driving the business. And so it's a little bit different of a language and what they're not saying versus what they are saying. And so we have these biases about, well, she might not be maybe she's just not cut out for this work, or she's just not strong enough, or she can't handle it, or maybe she's a risky investment. Again, we have these biases about how women, again, as caregivers, as nurturers, well, maybe she's this ticking time bomb of maternity, as one man told us. Oh. And then I'm suddenly going to lose her, you know, if I begin to, you know, I'm investing all this time and resources into her, just to lose her out there. So there's a lot of bias and perception that we have to get past, I think, is one of the keys. The other one is that a lot of men talked about, and we heard more of this, of course, as Me Too went widespread, for the new research around good guys, is that, you know, there's an anxiety about having, again, close relationships with women in the workplace. Again, most men felt very comfortable. They had what we called a man script, the social script about what does a relationship look like with a woman. When it came to, for example, they, you know, as they were socialized with their mothers, they had sisters. If they grew up and now they have a wife, or if they have a daughter, they're like, you know, I feel like I have this social script for what this looks like. But having a close, personal, intimate relationship with a woman in the workplace, you know, most guys got really kind of weird about it, because it's like, that's not allowed to be sexual. And so what do I do? Right. What is it? What's that look like? And so when you get very uncomfortable with these things, what do? We run for the hills, right? We avoid the discomfort. And the clinical psychologist down there is laughing, because he would tell you that, well, the solution to this is not less interaction, it's more interaction. Right. That's so we need the exposure therapy that to get through, get over and understand what these look like. And the other ones are just around perceptions about how others might perceive me suddenly having friendships or mentorships or these other relationships with women in the workplace. It's like, ooh, what's going on there with Dave? Why is he spending all that time with Deirdre? You know, are we giving him something to talk about? Right. And so there were all of these. And then, of course, Me Too went widespread. And the research has very clearly shown that men, and especially managers, have become even less comfortable engaging in mentoring relationships and going out to lunch or traveling, back when we used to travel with each other, that they're just less, you know, comfortable with doing these things. And, you know, and Me Too has really created in many ways in men's circles a lot of false narratives. And it's not Me Too has created, but men have perpetuated these false narratives around this, that suddenly, you know, women have become dangerous or scary to work with. It's like, no, not really. You know, that women created Me Too. It's like, no, sorry, that was a bunch of serial perpetrators and harassers. And there's this false narrative around the fact that women are going to falsely accuse men in some sort of, you know, huge numbers. And it's like, no, there's not a shred of evidence out there that supports any of that. But these are the things that go on. And we as guys have got to stop these false narratives, because it's, again, it's keeping us from doing the work that we need to be doing. And they really, you know, again, they're not true. But the last two things I'd like to leave you with is really around the allyship gap, in the sense that most men out there who think they are doing the work or believe in gender equity, just because they believe in it, they think they're actually doing more than they actually are. And then when we get feedback from women, the feedback says, no, really, you're not doing as much as you think, and you need to be doing more. And here's what it might look like. And so there's this little bit of this allyship gap. And the other part of that is men often are not aware of the problems and the challenges that are going on in the workplace. And if you're not aware of it, you can't see it, it's really hard to fix it. And we heard this over and over again. And so there's a lot of this at the very beginning. You've got to develop an awareness of what these challenges are. And that requires a lot of self-education. It requires a lot of interaction with people who don't look like you.
Absolutely. So you've made some really good key points. This, the action steps and being aware, what you just said. Brad, if you are aware, are there just some men who might not be willing, maybe it's a really hectic organization. They think somebody else will do it. Does that play a fact as well?
Yeah. I think there are two pieces to what you just said there, Deirdre, and there are probably more, but two immediately come to mind. One is what Dave and I refer to as a zero-sum bias, right, mm-hmm. that a lot of men have. That, yeah, it would be nice to if we saw more women succeeding, but I'm also worried about that because I'm afraid that if women rise, if women succeed, if they get advanced, I'm going to lose somehow as a guy, right? So it's this us versus them thinking. And the fallacy there, of course, is we see businesses that bring in more talented women and promote them into real leadership positions. Those companies actually make more money. They get more successful. And so they actually grow. And so the opportunities for everybody actually increase, you know, across the board when you have more inclusion and genuine gender balance in leadership. and then, you know, the other piece I'm forgetting now. I had another great idea, but I think there are other things that can keep guys on the sideline. But
yeah, I was going to say the modern, there's one of this idea of modern sexism today that this notion that somehow we've gotten to equity. We've leveled the playing field and there is no more of this imbalance in the workplace and there are no more inequities. And therefore too, again, it kind of goes back into that zero sum world that we're giving women some sort of an advantage over men in that way by doing that. Again, another false narrative that's out there.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a win-win for everybody, this sense of inclusion and making everybody belong and the equity. So I would love to hear maybe an aha moment, something from the book that you learned that you didn't expect. So Brad, any aha moments in the research?
So many aha moments. I'll just give you one that I think was actually a bit of a shocker for both Dave and I, Deirdre. And it related to a phenomenon that women experience. And we did not even realize that not only did we not get it, that this was going on, but we didn't realize that women talk to each other about this all the time. And guys, it just goes over our heads. So it's a phenomenon of being in a meeting and offering a great idea, right? Creative, terrific contribution. And everyone in the meeting, often a lot of other men, just go, whatever. And then literally 15 minutes later, some dude repackages almost exactly what she said. And everyone gives him credit. Like, awesome, Bob. That is really, we should run with that. Yeah. And so we heard this over and over. And I remember after like the 10th interview, I go to Dave and I say, Dave, are you hearing this over and over that women have their ideas stolen? And he said, yes. And I said, has that ever happened to you? And he's like, nope. And so I genuinely think we men don't notice it when it happens to women and it doesn't get directed to us as much. So we heard women actually have their own language about this. It's called having your idea bro-appropriated or being being he-peated. And then the last one we heard is being him-itated.
I haven't heard that one.
Yeah. So, I mean,
I love it.
That was a huge aha moment. And I think the effect of learning about that for us, Deirdre, is that now Dave and I see this happen in actual meetings. Now that we're aware of it, you know, the blinders have been taken off. Now we see it. And so now we have the opportunity to disrupt, right? So, and I don't have to get real confrontational. I can just say, hey, Bob, you're right. Deirdre did have a good idea. I think we should run with her idea. I can just attribute it back and make it really clear who had the idea initially. And I think if men could become more aware of dynamics like that, we then would be in a position to show some real allyship.
Yes. Now that's a good guy. So David, any, even though that was an aha moment for you, you want to share another one?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the challenges I think that has always been there around gender equity. And as we think about this in the workplace is that, again, as a sociologist, I immediately start looking at the family too in that interaction. And I know that we've got to understand how we can impact this from a family perspective. And it's clear that in the research now that when men are involved at home as all unequal allies, right, this is where gender equity has to begin, because it makes a difference in several different places. One, it shows in our partner's career. So if you're partnered with a woman and you're fully supporting her career, right, obviously that's going to help. And it's also really critical for our kids. You know, so as dads, we make a difference in our kids' lives when they see us as allies at home and doing our fair share of the work, and being involved in our kids' lives too, in their relationships with them, that our sons get a whole different perspective, a very more inclusive perspective on what gender roles look like and how we combine work and family. And they're going to take that to the workplace with them. And then for our daughters, the research is really clear that as when they see us doing this work, that they're more likely to persist in their own careers and reach their own career goals and aspirations. And they're more likely to go into non-traditional professions and industries out there. So if we're trying to balance things in the military or in law, finance, tech, STEM, all these places that have been traditionally male, you know, we've got to start doing our side of this as dads. And the connection back into the workplace, I think, is so important. And not, you know, thinking that it doesn't make an impact, because I think it does. When we go back into the workplace, you know, calling ourselves allies or doing ally work in the workplace is not the same if you're not doing it at home also, because people around you, women, and I would say junior men. So if you're a senior man, the junior men need to see you. What does it look like when you combine work and family in a way that as an ally would? And it looks like, well, when the kids are sick and somebody has to take them to the doctor and it's my turn to take them to the doctor, guess what? I don't slink out the back door and really quietly hush, hush. And so nobody sees me. I leave loudly. And men talked about this, about how, nope, you've got to be really loud and public about it. So others see you doing this. You role model it by example, because it equalizes and it normalizes things in the workplace around caregiving. And so that it makes it better for the junior men who need to be doing this or want to be doing it, they can do it. And then for women as well. So we remove a lot of the stigma related to it. So this direct connection between taking paid sick leave, taking your full parental leave, by the way, if you're a guy out there, make sure that you're taking the full parental leave, not just a few days of it. And talking about these things so that it normalizes it for everyone in the workplace, not just for junior men, but for women as well.
Absolutely. You're role modeling in the home, in the organization. You're living it. You're not just saying it. That is so important. And I can't even believe it's time to get to the parting advice. So just some quick thoughts. You've shared so much already, but Brad, parting advice to women worldwide.
Yeah. So especially if I'm talking to women in this moment about allyship, I would say look for the guys who are already doing a bit of this work, right? Who are those guys that show up as colleagues? They listen, they don't make assumptions, they're genuinely interested in how they can get better. They receive feedback very gracefully and then they implement it. If you can leverage those guys into working with other men, you know, Dave and I are big on ally communities, you know, try and get those men invited to your women's network or women's ERG. Let them develop a subtrack of male allies within your women's ERG, because as soon as we get, you know, critical mass of men actually leaning in and asking how they can contribute, now I think we're really starting to move the needle on equity at work.
Excellent. David, how about you?
Yeah, and then from an organizational perspective, I would just say that make sure that you're connecting all of your diversity and inclusion goals to your business outcomes, because that's so critical to have that all aligned within the business. And it's not something that's, oh, that's just something that HR does or HR, because again, we're all busy people. And if it's not prioritized as part of the business, then that's a challenge. And when you align it with the business, make sure you're transparent about it too, that you're talking about it with your employees about what the initiatives are. How well are we doing? Show the progress. If you're not doing well, that's fine. I mean, show what you're doing to try to change things up so that you can accomplish the goals you're doing. And that's, again, builds trust with your employees. It also builds trust with future investors for your company and the future talent of your that's looking to hopefully find a job within your company out there, because people care about what you're doing, not just what you're saying, but what you're doing when it comes to diversity and inclusion out there. And finally, it allows you to hold your managers and your senior leaders accountable for doing the work out there. If there's no accountability for the work, again, it's really hard to make it all happen.
Right. Well, excellent advice, both of you. Thank you. And last question, super easy. Where can people find out more about you and your book? So, Brad, you get
to start. Yeah. So, Dave and I have a website that we would refer people to. It's called workplaceallies.com. And you can find out all about our writing and our speaking. And we welcome you to join us there.
Terrific. And David, are you on LinkedIn? And Brad, are you on LinkedIn?
We're both on LinkedIn, David G. Smith, PhD, and W. Brad Johnson there for Brad on LinkedIn. And I'm also on Twitter at the same handle.
Excellent. Brad, are you on Twitter too?
I am not a tweeter because I am an introvert, and I let my extroverted co-author, Dave, do all my tweeting for me.
All right. Well, at least one of you is tweeting. That's okay. Yeah. Feels comfortable. Well, gentlemen, thank you very much for sharing your journey, your advice. I hope everybody, male and female, check out your book. And I just thank you. Thank you for sharing your insights.
Thank you.
Thanks, Deirdre.
You're welcome. And a big thank you to all of you for tuning into Women Worldwide. And please keep the conversations going and the feedback coming. And you know you can always reach out to me on Twitter. I'm at Dee Breckenridge. And send me an email, too, because some of you are sending emails and saying what some of your challenges are. I'm Deirdre at pureperformancecom.com. Okay, everybody, be safe and stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.